welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, weekly podcast for the haunted attraction haunt entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return to you once again, whether you're catching us live on Facebook on Sunday, getting the recorded version Monday, or whenever you're choosing to listen to this episode. We thank you for letting us spend an hour with you. You can definitely check out more Haunt Weekly. Take your time. We're at HauntWeekly.com. On Facebook, we're Facebook.com/HauntWeekly. Twitter.com/HauntWeekly. YouTube.com/HauntWeekly. You can also find us on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are sold. And as always, feel free to join us live, ask questions, get involved, become a part of the podcast every Friday at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern at Facebook.com/HauntWeekly as we do these episodes live. Well, on that note, we have a special guest with us. Well, first things first, I got to take care of one thing, and that is if you can hear a dull roar in the background, I'm going to do my best to edit it out, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to fail. It's just New Orleans drowning. Don't worry about it. There's nothing strange to us. We literally, like, the window we have for the podcast is like the heaviest rain we have seen in quite some time, and we have a tin roof, so do the math. So please, don't adjust your speakers. Don't blame your audio equipment or ours. But on that note, we do get to welcome a very, very amazing person with a lot of great information to talk about. I'm very happy to be introducing Alex Berland from Conjured Media. Alex, are you there? How's it going?
I'm here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yes, yes, indeed. Very excited to have you. You have been a busy, busy little beaver. You have been
very busy.
Yes. So, for those that don't know, Conjured Media is a haunted attraction marketing company. We'll say that for now. I'll let you do the full pitch in a minute. And you guys have been working, I would say, to change a lot of things about haunt marketing for the better. So why don't you give us a quick overview about what Conjured Media is, and then we'll jump into the topic.
Yeah, so just to kind of give you the overview. So first, I'm Alex Berland. I am the CEO slash CMO. So I basically handle kind of running the business and also the marketing side of things. My business partner, Nick, is the creative director, and he handles more of a creative aspect of things. But we're Conjured Media. We're a full-service marketing and creative agency that specializes in haunted attractions. So we handle everything from your videos to your digital ads to your website and more. Full package, everything. So I think one of the things that makes us stand out from others in the industry is just kind of our process that we've really perfected over the past 4 years of working with haunts, which is basically to use engaging stories to catch the attention of your audience and kind of stop the scroll and get them engaged, and then using powerful data insights to then convert them into sales and buying tickets at your haunt. And I think really kind of through this process, our bread and butter is really we just increase your profits and increase the value of your existing guests, getting them to spend more, getting them to come back each year. And then not just bringing new people to your haunt, but getting the right people to your haunt, people who are going to be excited about that experience, who are then going to tell their friends, and just keep building your business year after year. That's what we do.
Okay. Yeah. So what we're talking about today is basically we got a series of actually marketing related topics that are pretty interesting here. But the first one, and this was your proposal, by the way, Alex, so I'm very excited to hear your thoughts on this, was the idea of storytelling through a business lens, viewing the financial benefits, if you will, of having a good haunt story. Would you like to go into that?
Yes, sure. So I think just kind of like a good place to start and to kind of keep like a context and like a grounding, like, and one of the things you guys talk a lot about on this show, you know, I've heard you guys talk about it, is just the concept of like when you think of a haunted attraction and you think of the people who own haunted attractions and the kind of the spectrum, right? We have people who are very business oriented. This is where they make their money. This is, you know, everything is the line item and making as much as possible. And then you have the people that are, it's just a complete passion for them. You know, if they can make the spookiest, craziest, you know, scariest haunted attraction that is as amazing as it possibly can, and everything else falls by the wayside, right? And then obviously everyone falls in between. And I guess kind of like my pitch today is just kind of like no matter where you fall on that spectrum, even if you're more on the passion side, still keeping that businessy element in your mind and kind of thinking like the power of what running your haunt like a business and through that business lens can ultimately do for you and help make your creative side even better, right?
Yeah. We've been big proponents of treating a haunted attraction like a business. And you're absolutely right, this is such a passion-driven industry. Nobody really goes into haunting to get rich that I'm aware of. But you have to keep the lights on or off, as haunt case may be. True. But the point is, you have to keep the doors open in order to be allowed to play, in order to have that creative fun.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that's a point I know we have harped on a million times, and yeah, I could not agree with you more about that. That's just the truth. And unfortunately, one of the things we've complained about is that a lot of people in the haunted industry don't think of this as a business.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So, and one of the things I know we have said before is the power of storytelling to improve your haunt. And one of the reasons we have focused on it is because it's not something you have to build. It's not something you have to, you know, do that type of work in. I mean, if you want to do it yourself, it's free. But if you want to hire someone else to do it for you, like Contract Media, perhaps, you can absolutely do that and have a way separate from all the investment you're making into the haunt to really deepen the impact. So I guess to start with, we really need to nail down what the hell we're talking about with story. So what is the definition of stories we're working with?
Yeah, for sure. So kind of what we do here at Conjured Media is, and how we think of story, is essentially what we're doing is we're kind of creating a narrative, creating something that will embed everything from your online presence all the way through your experience at the haunt, right? So, you know, we think of everything from like, you know, you always see that everyone has a story on their website, right? And the question is like, how cohesive and how integrated is that story throughout the entire experience, right? And when you... when you integrate it throughout the entire experience, there's a lot of great business benefits that you're going to get out of it, right? So if you're making a narrative, one of the biggest things about this is that you're going to stand out from the other people in your market. Yeah. If you think of like the typical haunted house ad, right? You're going to be walking, it's a walkthrough of a haunt. You're going to see all these characters jumping out at you. It's fast paced, right? And people jump scares and stuff like that, right? That is going to be exactly the same thing that everyone else is doing. But if you're making a story, if you're making a narrative, something people can go, wow, I can really sink my teeth into this, right? And if you think of the pandemic, right? Everyone's been at home the past year. What are the biggest things that everyone's doing? Well, everyone's on Netflix, on Hulu. Everyone is engaged in story, right? Story has one of those abilities to really capture the mind, capture us, and keep us engaged. So by having that story that you're then pushing out through your marketing materials, and then, of course, integrating that into your experience at the haunted attraction, by having that cohesive element, you're basically, you as a customer, as a guest, you're going to notice that and see that. And you're going to be like, wow, I understand what's happening. It's going to capture you, right? And then when you think of people coming back, if you add to your story and change your story, this allows you to retain people year after year. So a lot of people think, you know, you have to kind of change your haunted attraction, per se, year after year. And, you know, some people, like, you change some rooms, or some people change the whole thing, depending on what you do. But by changing your story, like you said, it's almost a free thing you don't really have to do. You're automatically signaling to everyone this is a new experience, and it's a reason to come back to your haunted attraction.
And it adds into the immersion of the experience whenever you go to the haunted house.
Yeah. And
exactly.
And one of the things we talk about haunting as a storytelling medium, but there's a reality with it. People spend an average of like 10 to 25 seconds in a room, right? You don't spend very long in each individual room. So you don't have a lot of time to relay the story necessarily in the haunt. You can do things to storytell within a haunt, and we've seen some great examples of that. And you can and should do those things. But the time to really lay the groundwork of that story is beforehand, when you got their attention for minutes at a time, or, you know, at least to a commercial length, on a story element that you can use that to lay a foundation that the haunt then builds on top of. And so that's one of the reasons why storytelling through your marketing is so potentially powerful.
Exactly. Spot on, 100%. And kind of one of the things that speaks to like the power of this, and, you know, just for context on my background, we started doing haunt marketing in 2017 for a haunt in Long Island called Schmidt's Farm Haunted House. And during that time, I was actually the front of house manager for 2 years. So I got to really be immersed in the world of haunts and really got to see how the business operates, see how haunts are built, and really get that extra understanding that I feel a lot of other people and who just do marketing don't necessarily get, having that on-site experience and seeing that ticket line, you know, seeing when a line is 2 hours long to wait for the haunted, and just seeing all the problems that ensue. It kind of gives you that extra perspective. But one of the things that we noticed when we started doing these narratives was we had one example that stands out in my mind. There was like a 5-year-old kid who was the first in line waiting for the doors to open. And I remember walking up to him and he was like, "Is Sophia going to be there?" And Sophia was one of the characters that we had running in our ads on our website. She was kind of the creation of her dad, who was this crazy plastic surgeon who like made her face this like mangled thing. And she kills a girl, the weed whacker. But like you would never think that someone would stop, watch a Facebook ad, watch a video on your website, and then come down specifically to experience that. But here I am standing there like a 5-year-old kid who was asking for this character, right? You know, one of our other clients in Alabama, Warehouse 31, I remember we were doing some customer service for them, and someone was complaining that they missed the character in the haunted attraction. I'm like texting the owner, I'm like, is the butcher in the house? And he's like, yeah, the butcher's there. I don't know what this person's talking about. But this person actually went out of their way to complain for not seeing the character. They were so excited to see the character. Right.
Yeah. And
so it took that extra level of immersion.
Yeah. And, you know, we had a haunt locally a couple years ago. They did a video. They did a commercial. It was a really cool commercial.
Yes. You and I got to the same place.
Yeah. Really, really kick ass commercial. And you did the same thought, exact same time. And it got us amped to go. And it featured this old man, and he was like crawling creepily and moving. And it's like, oh man, I can't wait to see that dude in the haunt.
Exactly.
That's going to mess with my brain. It's going to be great. And he wasn't there. And but we didn't complain. What we did is we went on the internet and we actually found the stock video they used.
Right.
Yeah, so, and this is a fairly large haunt in the area.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they couldn't have shot something using their characters.
Yeah, and they have characters. And I think they're one of the better ones about having that.
Yeah, and I think that's important, is that if you're going to put a story out there, you have to deliver on what's in the story.
Oh, 100%. And that's kind of like, you know, through the process of doing this for the past, you know, 4 years now, and you get to learn from your mistakes and as your business grows and as you do things, right? Like, you know, we get to really experience that hand on. When we first started working with Schmidt's, for example, they had a manager that didn't really see eye to eye with what we were doing. And he actually refused to integrate the characters into the haunted house the first year that we were working together, which we couldn't explain why. It seemed pretty obvious, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he had his arguments. And then the second year, we basically, the story was like this box that kind of travels through time and these vignettes through time of how it like kind of takes people over and corrupts them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of got him to agree, hey, just take that box and just put it in one of the rooms towards the end. Like that's all we wanted. Just put the box. So this is literally the opening night, and I'm still the front of house manager at this point. So he puts the box in, and we're waiting by the exit. And all these people keep coming out saying, "Oh my God, we saw the box. That's the box from the video. That's the box from the video." Like, and it's just crazy because like this seems very intuitive and seems like something you would just get.
It's a celebrity, but it's a box.
Yeah,
right. And I mean, and when we talk about immersion, and we talk, like you said, having the characters there, this is not something that's difficult to do. Like, so for example, when we create our narratives, obviously it's very difficult to go on location to someone, bring a whole film crew out from New York where we're located, and, you know, that the expenses just would not make sense for this industry to do. So we film everything here in New York, leveraging our connections to kind of bring the price down. But of course, you know, we're supplying you with the costumes to actually bring these characters to life with, you know, we work with you to kind of say, hey, like, what rooms can this character work with? And that's a huge important thing about when you're talking about narrative, right? And why I said a narrative is really just this overarching thing that can then engage with your theme, can engage with your haunt. Where a lot of haunts, they don't have a singular thing. They have different rooms and stuff. We're just having the characters outside, right? Anything that you can do to just have that touch point to see the character. But if you specifically, for whatever reason, don't put that character in your haunt, you are doing a disservice.
Yeah, and it's like
you
said, outside.
You know, you run through the negative experiences.
Yeah, so did I understand that right, that your packages include the costume for the character? for one of the main ones from the story?
Yeah, exactly. So whenever we, and we're kind of changing things up this year, kind of what we've been doing the past 3 years was kind of doing like a more like bespoke, you know, custom stories for people. Mm-hmm. And kind of the whole process was we would work with them, you know, come up with the characters that they liked, that worked with kind of what was working in their haunt, was working with the stories. We pitch all of that. And then, yeah, we would definitely have, I see the rain is acting up. But yeah, then we would basically, all the stuff we were filming the characters with, we would, you know, ship that out to them and then it would integrate it into their haunt.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, yeah.
And yeah, that's much better than going to a stock video library and just
pulling
cool looking
stuff video
and not using
I can do that. People. That's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, we are vehemently against stock anything just for the, again, if we're talking, you know, from the business perspective, it just doesn't make any sense. There's just no reason to have a stock asset, right? Because what a stock asset is just a spooky, creepy thing. There is no cohesion, there is no story, there is no anything that makes any sense with that. When you're actually filming something with the narrative, that's something you can latch onto. So, like moving forward, one of the things that we realized, because like I said, we have two clients, one in New York and one in Alabama. And we've kind of, over the past 4 years, really perfected our process of what's effective and what works. And we have the data to prove all this stuff is really getting people results, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What we realize is that we can take the same story really at any location and apply it, you know, as long as, you know, there's, of course, cultural things. Like, for example, in Alabama, you know, one of the things we were told is, like, nothing satanic or anything like that, you know, because it's a heavily Christian population. And so there are definitely things that you have to understand when making a story, and we can get into kind of, you know, kind of what makes a good story mm-hmm. in a little bit. But because we realize that we can take these stories and place them anywhere, and it still not be a stock asset. A stock asset, again, doesn't have that thing to grab you, doesn't have anything to bite into that you can't integrate into your haunt. But we can then take those stories, and that's kind of what we're doing this year, is we're kind of launching a program to do that, to take the existing stories we have and basically rebrand them to different places, region-locked across the country, and then integrate them into your haunt. So you're kind of, you got to save money by having these things already made. You don't have to, you know, shell out for a whole custom thing, but you still get all the benefits of that, what was previously custom.
Right, and just real quick, in case someone didn't understand or didn't catch it, explain region locked.
Sure. So one of the things that we do, so obviously as a marketing company, we only work with partners in a specific location. So for example, you know, if you're in California, we're not going to work with another client that's within, you know, X number of miles of you. And that's regardless of kind of what we're offering you. So we do that because, you know, we want to have, our goal is to build relationships with our clients. We don't want to be working with a guy down the street. You know, unless, of course, you guys are friends and you have one of those conglomerates, like in Long Island, they had a thing called Scream Long Island. Like, you know, something like that would make more sense. But yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So the story you get is the one that you get for your area around you.
And we've talked about it before. Haunts are a hyper-local business, typically. Yeah. You're not going to get you're going to get nutters like you and me mm-hmm. that will travel all over the goddamn country for haunted houses. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But we're the exception, not the rule. Most people won't travel more than about an hour. So you got to think that a 60 to 70 mile radius around your haunts, the most important, that's your core circle. So yeah, if a region lock that is like 120 miles, that makes it so that there would not be much overlap between potential audiences, and you go further out than that, and you know, you're almost completely eliminating the possibility.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things that we've learned over the past 4 years of doing this and just collecting the data is, when you think of like the people who are going to haunted houses, I think us as haunters, people who are really invested in this, you know, who are on the Facebook groups, who are, you know, waiting, counting down the days till Halloween, waiting for the list
halfway
of haunts.
To Halloween.
You know, like, right, exactly. There you go. Most people who are attending haunted attractions are not those people.
No.
If you're that into it, you're probably working in a haunted attraction mm-hmm. or you're traveling around going to all them, right? So like the average person is not nearly as invested in this experience. It is a fun thing to do with their friends. It is a great night where you can get scared, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's important that, you know, again, we're talking about from a business perspective, it's like, what can you do to make your stuff, from a marketing perspective and from an experience perspective, appealing to those people, right? So when we talk about, you know, creating these custom narratives, right? Obviously you want stories that are going to appeal to a wide range of people that are relatively loose, that can be moldable and adaptable. You don't want to have, you know, the next biggest, gorgeous thing that can come around as an ad that is going to isolate your audience. Or even like I mentioned in Alabama, right? Like you wouldn't want to run the satanic narrative in a place where people are not going to respond to that. But it's just being hyper aware of who is coming to your haunted attraction. And yeah, that's kind of one of the things that we help haunt owners understand as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know even, yeah, we're just home haunters, but still, I mean, I think there's a lot of overlap between the people that come to our haunt and go to other ones. And it's mostly young people, family units slash friend units.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much, I would say, 95% of our bread and butter. It's not just weirdos like us that rock up to a haunt.
No, they've started showing up recently, but didn't happen for a long time.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, I like I said, and I know you touched on this earlier, but it's really great though.
Sure.
The thing about storytelling is how it does help you stand out as a haunt, and it can help you stand out before your doors ever open. Once you've got a narrative, once you've got a universe going, like you know the Marvel universe. Even before the next Marvel movies come out, there's all this established lore there that they can tap into and build from. That's kind
exactly
of what this is. And it gives you so much more depth before, because all haunts, you know, when the haunts haven't opened, they're all the same. They're all exactly the same quality, you know what I mean? The playing field level, you're only as good as your last customer type thing. And when you haven't had any for the season, everyone's tied. The score is 0-0. This is a chance to take a lead, so to speak, before the game starts. And I think you made an excellent point about customer retention being really important, because people get invested in stories. People invest in stories more than they invest in brands.
Yeah, it's really so true. And again, none of this is really like revolutionary per se. This is all just like you mentioned the Marvel universe, right? Like think of how passionate people are about Marvel. It's like, well, these are stories that have existed, you know, for decades now. But even besides that, just like, you know, having these characters that you can really invest in and attach to, and that's what draws people in. And again, it's important to understand the average person. So like when we go through the comments on our ads that we're running with these videos with the different characters and stuff like that, right? You see people go like, oh my God, wow, I'm so excited to meet this character. I can't wait to be engaged. Then you have half the people who are like, is this a movie? Like, what is this? Like, I don't understand, right? And of course, you know, at face value, it goes, well, that's not effective. They should know they're going to a haunt, right? But think of just the fact that they asked that question. That's how invested they are in, I want to come experience this. And that's what really separates through our process of making narratives versus just spooky stuff. Because people that are average people, right? Like, so according to our data, like in Alabama, we've collected a lot of stuff. There's like roughly 60% of people that came through last season had been there before at some point in time, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously that's very good customer retention. But it's a concept of, like we talked about, like also people are coming from that local area. So most people are not going to a bunch of haunted houses per se. They don't have that understanding of what is like a good or bad haunt that someone who's a haunter really fundamentally understands, right? You know, you see on like Haunters Hangout, people debating of like, what is a good haunt? What is a bad haunt? So if you have that narrative, that is what's going to drive people to your haunt. And then when they go, as long as like, what I think the goal of your haunted attraction should be, and again, we're talking about from like just a business perspective, like, of course, it's not just dollars and cents, right? You want to make sure that you're really putting your heart and soul into your haunt and that it is an amazing experience, right? But I think the metric for the average person of what a good haunt is did I have a great time when I come there? And do I want to come back?
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So like the quality of your show can kind of be relatively low in that metric, right? As long as you achieve those two things. And that's kind of, you know, for example, with Schmidt's Farm in Long Island, one of the things we noticed is like they've been around, I think, 26 years now. We started working with them 4 years ago. And now they've really stepped up their game, you know, because of how good their show has been doing, and because of how many people we bought through the door, they just invested a crazy amount in new props and rooms and stuff. But before it was like, you know, just kind of an average haunted attraction that, you know, these are farmers who put it on, and the people who worked in it were very passionate, but the goal wasn't really to make, you know, the best possible thing. It was just to have a, you know, a cool attraction, and that they were still outperforming most of their haunted attractions in the country. Right. So I think that's like a really interesting thing, just to like focus on what your customer understands and knows. Yeah. And if you can focus on those narratives to bring them in, it allows you also to pick up a lot of the slack in other areas as well.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, that's something that I know we don't talk enough about. Like the quote-unquote quality of a haunt isn't really measured by how good your props are, how amazing your lighting is, how great the actors are even. It's measured in did people have fun. It's measured in smiles on faces. and butts at the ticket booth. You know, those are the two things.
Right.
You measure it in.
Yeah, feet in line.
Feet in line, whatever. I was trying to find out how many butts in seats, but we don't have seats.
and this is like a debate I had with that former manager, and luckily they have new managers now who are like just really great guys who are taking Schmitz to like a whole new level. I'm super excited for their show this upcoming year. But I remember we had like this whole like 2-hour meeting, right? Where it's just kind of like we were talking about room design and stuff, and this is just stuff I've picked up just, you know, being in the haunt for 2 years, right? It's just like if you can have an immersive set in your haunt, it's not that like we had a debate where I said, well, on the walls, instead of being black plywood walls, why don't we put some stuff up? You know, like we looked at like Headless Horseman, for example, was a great, you know, well-known haunted, probably the number one haunted attraction at this point, right? When you go in there, there's like newspaper clippings on the wall in one of the rooms where it's like, you know, the serial killer compiled, you know, all of his like hit lists and everything like that. And when we had this conversation, he was like, well, no one's going to stop and read the newspaper. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course no one's going to read it, but you might glance it, you might see a word here and there, and it creates the immersive experience, right? So it's like, you don't need to go 100% all out where you have to have 100% immersion, but you want to have enough immersion. So like, when you're thinking of like where you're going to resource your time, it's like anything, like, you know, when I'm working on a creative project, right, it's like, I can work on that project for weeks, mm-hmm. and tweak every little thing, but there's diminishing returns at some point. So I think, you know, with haunt owners and with people who build haunted attractions, right? Like, you're working till that final day. So right before you open, everyone is working to make it perfect, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's just kind of like
up to opening, understanding past opening. But yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, I completely agree with that because I do a lot of the detail work in the haunt, and there is definitely a point where I say, okay, it's not where I originally envisioned it. It's not to that level, but it's mm-hmm. good enough. You know,
and when you get the stage lighting and all that, it's going to be fine. And, you know, you have to ask yourself the ultimate question, which is something we've got to get better about ourselves, is, mm-hmm. is this effort going to make the haunt more fun?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we do have a few customers every year who look at the details. And when really, we go to haunts, we look at the details. Like, if I go if I go to a haunt and see a lot of black walls, I'm not going to be that impressed. So I'm glad that you changed their mind on that. I'm actually looking at the bar that we built for the room that we're sitting in, and it's covered in law book pages from a law book, and it makes me laugh.
So, yeah. So, real fast, so we're about halfway in. I want to know more about your process for creating these stories. I want to talk about, you know, how you do it, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. So, so I'll just jump into it.
Jump into it, man.
So basically, kind of what we do is we kind of take essentially like pretty much like a month and a half of pre-production time. This is essentially where it's, you know, we're working with a client. My business partner is the one who's creating all the stories, doing all of that. And, you know, we kind of pitch it back and forth. And there's kind of like from when we're looking at, like, my job is really to evaluate kind of like the business worthiness of this story, right? So the first thing that we really look at is kind of like, is this just a good story? And that's obviously, that's the creative side. That's, you know, there's no quantifiable measure of what a good story is. It's, but does it have elements that are engaging, that are clear, concise, you can like understand what is happening in the story? So like, for example, I mentioned the story with the box that we had, right? Like, that was a really cool story that we liked, but one of the things we learned kind of through running the story was it wasn't necessarily the clearest, easiest thing to understand. So because of that, we lost kind of some engagement value in that regard. So it still performed very well, but it could have been better. So like, moving forward, that's kind of what we evaluate our stories on, is like, you know, is it a good story? Is it engaging? Is it clear and concise, right? So once we kind of have the story, you know, the client agrees, everyone, we're good to go, right? Then it's kind of like, what is ad safe about this story? That's a huge component that I think a lot of people don't realize. And I have definitely seen ads on Facebook, or people posting on Facebook with, you know, you get the kind of like the covering, which is like, this is like not safe. You have to click to view it. If it's an organic post, if it's an ad, you won't even see it at all, right? But making sure that whatever characters you're doing are ad safe. So like, no crazy gore, no blood, no violence. And even though these are not real violence, you know, the algorithms don't care about that. Yeah. So
I know a lot of prop makers consider a badge of honor that Facebook covered their latest prop. I'm like, yeah, that's great and all, until like you just pointed out you're trying to run a Facebook ad.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's it's not very effective if people cannot see what it is. So, you know, that's when my business partner and I, you know, for our first couple of years when we were first starting out, you know, he'd be like these amazing, awesome stories. And I'd be like, all right, you have to cut 3/5 of that right off the bat. You have to cut half of this one and that one. And then I remember we once had like a 3-hour fight where he was just like, well, we can't even do this then. What are you talking about? I'm like, no, we can do it. We got to just stick with the process. And, you know, so it's always a struggle. And, you know, we always test everything prior to the campaigns to make sure everything's working. And like I mentioned, you know, the pre-assembled stories that we're offering people, like those have already been tested and run and work, right? So we kind of have that extra level. But then like the next step is just like when you're creating a story from scratch, like, so now you have the story, you know, it's good, you know, it's ad safe. And the final tweak is just really kind of being like, just thinking of like I mentioned, is knowing the audience and the people around you, right? So it's just, again, like those little things like in Alabama of, you know, not having satanic stuff, just knowing things that, you know, when you think of like, you know, the culture is changing nowadays, there are certain things that might not be PC nowadays that, you know, a couple years ago might have been acceptable, right? It's just kind of knowing those things. And then you have a story, and then you have something that really they can latch onto. So from our process, once we have that, then we film everything here in New York. We kind of do the photo shoots. We do the video shoots all in the same day so we can have that cohesion. We want, you know, our characters to be in the sets from the video. So we have that across all of our graphic design, on your website, everything. So basically, again, like you're completing that immersive experience from all points. All points lead back to your haunt. So your website, your advertising, your organic social pages, your email, even everything's all leading back to that. They're going to get on site and then have that immersive experience, and they're going to leave and be like, I'm in the world. I can't wait to experience this. Got it. And if you have any other like process questions, you know, happy to dive in. I don't know if that was specific enough to your question.
Yeah. No, that's a really good answer, and it's fascinating because, you know, I think you're absolutely right about one of the challenges. Everyone complains that, you know, especially when you factor in like Facebook rules and so forth and guidelines, everyone complains that, oh, we can't do or say anything, we can't have any fun. Like, yeah, you can. You just have to be creative and use your imagination. You just have to think about it. You can't take the easy route. You know, you
right.
And that's one of the things a lot of people, and I always kind of, because like for us, our lead character is Bernie Baxter. He is a carny from around, you know, the 1870s who mm-hmm. is back and is bringing villains from New Orleans history. And New Orleans history is such a great thing to pull from for storytelling, because if you spend 5 minutes reading it, you know, you will not be want for haunt ideas for the rest of your life. Just go on a ghost tour, go on, you know, any New Orleans history tour, you'll have a million haunt ideas before 15 minutes in. And we do that, and basically though, we have this creepy carny character, and we focus on him and him telling the stories and him, you know, sort of conveying it, because yeah, that's something we can do very safely, very cheaply, and very easily. But it engages, like I said, you get that face out there, you get that character, and it makes it so that you really have this very marketable thing to put out there that is completely safe for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Mashable, I don't know where the hell kids put TikTok, TalkTik, whatever else there is out there.
Right.
So here's the thing. I we've talked about, you know, for a good while now. One of the reasons why we're doing this chat is because you are starting a pair of new offerings, coming up, and I want to spend a few minutes on that, and then I want to get into some more general marketing stuff, and we'll wrap up from there. So real quick, talk about, because you've laid the groundwork now, what are you doing? How are you fixing these problems?
Yeah, for sure. So this year we're launching a fresh off the plate for Transworld. We kind of have two new offerings. So the first one we're doing is called the Media Share. So this is where we're basically taking a brand new story that, you know, we always make a new story every year, the things that we were doing custom before. We're doing this Media Share where basically, because everything is region locked, we're basically going to assemble partners that are going to buy into the share. And obviously, the more people that join the share, we could even potentially do two if we get enough people. We're going to basically increase the production value. We're going to create a whole new story from scratch. You're getting a brand new, never before new story. We're then going to create all the characters, get all the costumes together, all the masks, everything like that. Film everything, do all the graphic design, and everyone then, you know, everything's rebranded for your haunt in your different market. And like I said, it's all region locked, so you don't have to worry about, you know, any competition. Mm-hmm. So you get the benefits of a whole brand new story. And the retail price for that is $10,000, but as a show special for Transworld, we're going to be offering it at $8,000. So you're saving $2,000 for signing up for the show special. And then the next thing that we're doing is, like I mentioned, kind of our pre-made, already proven stories that we've ran. And we're actually putting out we put out an annual case study every year, and we're about to put that out right before Transworld, where we kind of break down the numbers of how everything performed. You know, you can see how the haunts have grown over the years. You can see how all the ads performed and stuff like that. So all these stories that have been pre-tested, pre-proven, you can then buy those at a fraction of the price of even the media share, or obviously custom work that we're going to be doing. So those are kind of our two things, and that's going to be called the graveyard.
Yeah, and we kind of we'll have you repeat this, but what booth are you at Transworld?
Yeah, so we're going to be 1809 at Transworld. Definitely stop by.
And to Transworld, stop by.
And again, like one of the benefits of working with us for your creative and obviously your marketing needs in general is we've done all of the hard work of figuring out what works and what doesn't work. We know what is ad safe. We know what is going to be engaged. And of course, you can work with any other partner and you can do it all yourself. We've done all the things that have failed to know what now works, right? So we know we've been in a situation where we've had to edit videos and change videos at the last minute. But now we don't have that problem anymore because we've done it already. Okay. So it's just kind of, we take that risk out for you. Whereas if you're commissioning stuff with other people or yourself, you have that huge risk of what happens if my ad doesn't run. And then you're screwed. You just paid all this money for media that doesn't work.
Okay. What is the biggest mistake that people who are starting out with marketing make generally?
Wow, that is a huge question. There's like the biggest mistake with marketing, I think it's just not having a cohesive strategy that really incorporates, because like what we do is we have the creative side and the data side, right? So we're running ads with creative that's very attractive to people, but then we're also collecting all the data so that we understand how everything is working and in real time tweaking everything to get results, right? So I think the biggest mistake people make, especially when they're doing like their own marketing, is they don't have those two processes sorted and figured out. And then you're set up for failure because you don't know what's working, why it's working, and all of that. That, to me, I think is probably the biggest mistake people make off the bat.
All right. Well, we got some great questions here. And actually, I want to start with the last one.
Okay.
Because it speaks to our current situation, and I'm being greedy. Because it's from Japes A, so that's good. But also, it speaks to our current situation. So that helps. So I'm going to be greedy and bump him up to the front of the queue. Here's Japes' question. For many haunters, the process of going pro starts in the yard or the garage. What suggestions do you have for people that have zero budget for their marketing? And this is like before they break out and go pro and can hire someone like you. But what's something that they can do with no budget right now? What tips you got?
Yeah, so no budget is obviously very, very tough, right? Like, yeah, one of the things with marketing in general. Sorry, what was that?
You got to do pretty much all organic.
Right. Yeah. So you are limited to what you can do organically. Like you really can't do like the amount of people that go viral is very, very limited compared to what you can do with ads. But I wrote a whole article about this that I have to put out at some point. But if you don't have any budget, like literally zero, right? Like you're in this going pro for the first time. What I would say is obviously get some cool photos, take them yourself or anything like that. You know, make a story that you can come up with that yourself. Push the story on your organic social medias. But the next thing that I would really recommend you do is go online and find whatever area you are in. There are soccer teams, there are baseball teams, there are Girl Scouts. Find a list of literally every imaginable organization that you could possibly think of. You'll find at least 1,000 at some point, right? And if you literally have no money for marketing at all, what you can do is just call those people. This is a lot of work and not the best use of your time at all. But if you want to spend zero, you can just call people and say, bring 10 people down. We'll give you a group discount. And if you make enough phone calls, you will bring some number of people down, right? I'm talking like 1,000 phone calls. That is something you can literally do for no money. And to my knowledge, very few people do that at all. Like regardless of what their size of their haunt is, something people should do anyway. But think about it, right? If you sell tickets for $20, you bring, you know, it's a $25 ticket discounted $5 off per person, $20 for 10, you know, that will add up significantly after making those phone calls. So that's something I think is a really good organic thing you can do that people don't ever think to do.
Yeah, I have not thought of that either.
It's not a bad idea, though.
But yeah, I mean, reaching out to groups, especially in the age range that go to haunts, would be direct marketing to them.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
And that's obviously if you have like zero money. If you have some money, that the answer changes. But that's literally zero.
That was
the question.
Some money, say a few hundred dollars to spend. Like that's more in line with our actual marketing budget.
Yeah.
Sure. If you and again like, and this is the thing is like, marketing doesn't scale linearly like people think, right? It's like, and one of the main reasons for this, if we think of like Facebook's a good example of this, what Facebook's algorithm has is called a learning phase, where basically Facebook, as we all know, their algorithms collected data, like, you know, they've invested billions of dollars in this algorithm, they have data on every single person, which is what iOS 14.5 is trying to stop, right? But their algorithm is going to learn who is buying from your ads, right? And that takes time and money to invest in. So like a big reason like why Facebook campaigns or, you know, any digital campaign is not working is usually undercapitalization, because it doesn't have that process to connect all those dots, and or you didn't connect pixel tracking correctly. So that's a huge thing off the bat. So you obviously like can't really take advantage of that if you only have a couple hundred bucks. But from that perspective, I would say, yeah, like just run some Facebook ads, run some Google search if you have a very, very limited budget. Try to figure it out on your own. But again, it's not ideal. What I think if you're in the situation where not necessarily like a home haunter, but you are a pro haunt and you think you have like a limited marketing budget, this goes back to kind of the business perspective I was talking to. And when I was saying like talking about the details of every single thing and you know, invest, where do you invest your time as a haunt owner or your team, right? I look at it as like, you're going to go to Transworld. You're going to buy, you're like, cool, we're going to either refresh our haunt, or we're going to build these 2-3 rooms and it's going to be amazing. It's going to bring people down, right? The reality is that the ROI through marketing is so much better than the ROI probably on a per room basis of the haunt. And that's like return on investment, right?
Yeah.
And this is kind of what we've learned through our data. So if you're looking for where you can find budget, right? If you scale back those plans a little bit, say, cool, hey, instead of doing those 3 rooms, let's do 1 room really, really well. Well, that now clears up all the budget from those rooms that you can invest into marketing, right? So, you know, one of the things that we've seen through our ads, right, is if you're getting like a 4x return on Facebook, well, if you're putting in more budget into Facebook, that budget times 4, you just made all those new ticket sales, right? So, and we think of it, you know, for example, like Schmidt's Farm, right? After years and years of growth, so like the first year they grew 50%, then a 16% increase in revenue, and then they grew a 6% above that. This is pre-pandemic. Now they're at Transworld, they're buying tons of stuff and refreshing their home because now they have the capital to do it. So that's kind of how I think you find some budget.
Okay.
And that, you know, does that answer your question a little bit?
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Moving on.
Well,
go ahead.
Since you were talking about Facebook, there was a question last week about what's the best social media platform to reach the target audience?
Oh yeah, I think I commented on that, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so the main ones that we see are Facebook. Facebook is still very, very effective. It's one of the most effective ones. I think we're around 40 to 60% of the return we're getting for people is coming from Facebook. It's a very powerful platform. Google search is also a huge one. Instagram as well. I'd say like those three are really like the biggest ones as far as return.
Have you had any experience with TikTok? I mean, I have none. So...
So. Yeah, so my knowledge as of right now is that TikTok's, at least from the advertising side, you can't really do local. It's pretty much, I believe,
got
national.
It.
That might have changed since I've last looked at it.
No, that makes a lot of sense, though. Yeah.
I mean, I have talked to someone who they said they wanted to become a national haunted attraction, like, you know, like a Headless Horseman or something, and they wanted like, to do a national campaign. So, like, if that is your goal, right, then, yeah, then something like TikTok might make sense. But that's, you know, obviously much more expensive proposition.
Yeah, and you're going to be unfortunately wasting a lot of that money because, like I say, we're reaching people that are across country from you that can't go. It's impractical.
Yeah. So, I mean, TikTok is a really good organic platform because what you're seeing is people who understand the algorithm and who are making good content that's relevant. Those people are, you're able to build a much bigger following on TikTok than you are on kind of more mature platforms like, say, an Instagram or a Facebook.
Okay.
So definitely be on TikTok organically.
If you wanted to do some on the ground marketing in your area, what are the places to target?
Yeah, so like kind of our whole philosophy, and this is, I think, another thing that really helps us stand out from other agencies in this industry, right, is we pretty much really focus exclusively on digital. And the reason for that is if we think of like, you know, anything else with your budget, if we're thinking of like billboards, radio, you know, you're going to go to a pizzeria and then drop off flyers or anything like that, right? You're what you're able to generate from like an organic, but like a source like that. First of all, you cannot track really the results of what that is doing for you. So right now you're already at a huge advantage. You have no idea if that thing is working for you. And that's kind of like the core thing, is to understand where your money is going, how it's working, and why it's working. And secondly, it's also the reach, right? So if you think of like a billboard, right, you're limited by the people who can drive by that billboard. And that might be a lot of people, but on a digital platform, I can target just more people overall. And plus, everyone has a phone in their pocket. It's not guaranteed you're driving past this billboard or you're in that pizzeria to pick up flyers, right? So our whole philosophy is we think it's just a better return on your investment at the end of the day, just to do purely digital. And also, all the data you're getting from that, like I can retarget you, I can do all of these things, I can put you in my database, I can get your email, your phone number, and all these things that bring you back for free next time. All these powerful things you cannot do through other means. That being said, you know, if you're thinking of like, you know, like a local thing, like sponsorships, that kind of like more in line with like the question.
I was just thinking in general.
Something, this ties into the next question, actually, which is from Sam Farrell. He was asking about, and I may be the one to take this one, this is more my background since you do so much digital, but he said for physical ads, billboard, flyer, newspaper, etc., is it better to put much important info, date, time, price, etc., or present a great logo and a website where they can get the information? And so he's basically asking, you know, with a piece of physical media or physical ad, do you put all the information there, or do you just direct them to a website? And like I said, I'll take a shot at this one.
Yeah, sure.
Because with a billboard, you have 5 words, goddammit. Use them wisely.
Right.
You have no, you can't put all that information.
Yeah, and don't put a phone number on a billboard.
Nobody writes down phone numbers from, if your number isn't like a word, like 1-800, whatever.
1-800?
Hunter or something like that. Don't bother.
No.
Don't bother.
Well, this is, so for like a billboard, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking more of like signage in general.
Yeah.
Because being a marketing person and like, you know, just I'm always trying to like test things out and see when just drive past any signage, like anywhere, right? And just ask yourself, like, what am I noticing and not noticing, right?
Yeah.
And this is like a huge thing with like with haunt logos, right? And even like metal logos and stuff. Like people come up with these like incredibly complex logos that you just like cannot read or understand what it is.
Yeah.
So you're not making your cool logo is not making brand recognition. It's just unrecognizable, right? So if we're thinking of like something like a billboard, for example, like, yeah, I would either have a simple logo on it or literally just like haunted house and the name of your haunted house, like in clear block letters, even just so people can see it clearly and understand what it is. I would keep it minimal on a flyer. Like, and again, it depends. Newspaper is a little different. Like if someone is going to be like interacting and holding this thing, sure, you can have more information on it. And so people know where to find you.
Cause you're going to spend time with a flyer. You're not going to spend time with a billboard. You're being by it at, you know, 70 miles an hour. You don't have time. But with a flyer, yeah, put all that information on there. Absolutely. Put QR codes too. Do both, you know, direct them to a website, but also put the information there. That way it can be 2 points of contact, and 2 points of communication with one flyer.
Exactly.
You get a chance to get them both physically with a flyer and digitally with the same information. That's 2 points of contact, increases the chance it'll be remembered.
Yeah, and I know that at the costume shops, people look for the flyers.
Yeah.
So they know that costume shops are going to have flyers. If they're looking to go to a haunted house, they'll look to see if there's a flyer there.
The one physical place you definitely want to be is the Spirit costume shops and other big costume stores in your area. You definitely want to have a presence there. Yeah, I know, like you said, it's not trackable. There's all kinds of problems with it. But that is where people get their Halloween information. And it's the truth. Okay.
Yeah, so just to hit on that real quick, right?
Yeah.
We put the address and all of that in all of our digital ads anyway. Just so, you know, if you're stopping the scroll, you'll see. You understand like where this place is, and it might be a different haunt than you've been to or think, because most people see haunted house and they have something in mind. They don't necessarily know your haunt per se, like just the average cold person. I'm definitely not opposed to, you know, if you want to put flyers in the costume shop, that might be effective. And that's totally fine. It's just a question of what is the better use of your dollar at the end of the day.
I'm a data junkie myself, so I understand your concerns with that, but yeah. If you're going to do anything physical, flyers at costume shops is one. It got to be one of your
Goals. For sure. Go for it.
Next question, Crystal.
All right. How do you get a media sponsor and what can it mean?
How do you find an influencer?
Yeah.
What is a media sponsor?
Jessica Woodward. I'm not 100% sure what it means in this context. Mm-hmm. I know one haunt locally, one haunt we worked at actually, did a partnership with the local NBC affiliate.
Okay.
What they did is they installed a scare cam in the haunt, and mm-hmm. the NBC affiliate got the footage for that and was airing, you know, during breaks and stuff. And that was just it. It was a partnership where they got to do this fun little thing during the news, ad breaks during the news, and they got their logo and ad and key pertinent info on screen during it. And it was just a cool mm-hmm. thing that they split. And it ended up not costing them. I don't remember if they paid for it or not, actually. I can't remember. I'd have to ask.
Yeah.
But if they didn't pay
that's
much.
That's more of your I know they the PR, right? That's more of your
So, and yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a local media sponsor, start calling the TV stations, what I would say. TV mm-hmm. and radio are going to be your best. I mean, people listen to radio. Like, people think radio's dead. It's very much alive. And very much
alive. Even with Schmidt's Farm, there's a local anchor. Her name was Erin. I think she moved to like a different thing in the local station. But when she would come and do her segment, you know, gave her a promo code and tracked all the, you know, and she brought a lot of people down, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's greatly impactful stuff. I mean, the other question was like, how do you find an influencer?
Yeah.
They tend to find you, I guess, is probably the easiest thing I've seen. But it just depends like what you mean by an influencer. So like,
yeah, and
when. Yeah, do you want to go?
Well, I'll say what was said at one of the HauntCon talks that I really liked about if you want to get an influencer like that and really get them on board, the way to do it is to have like a media day where the influencers and local media
can come down.
They can meet this actor. They can hang out, maybe do a little behind the scenes stuff, see some of the scares, photo ops. Just have a media day and bring not only, like I said, the local media, but also local influencers.
Yeah, so like when it comes to influencers in general, that you hit it right there. It's local influencers, right? So there's like there's always levels of influencer marketing, and like for a haunted house, I think influencers are not. I don't think the ROI is there relative to like in other industries. So like obviously, if you're talking like national personalities, you know, multi millions, that cost is probably going to be out of your budget anyway, and just ultimately not worth it to have someone national like that, unless again you're doing some meet and greet thing where it's more of an appearance than like trying to get, you know, the brand recognition. But you can also find like here in Long Island, for example, there's a lot of micro food influencers who, you know, they all kind of have like the same audience of people who, and you know, and again, like we're thinking of regular people, right? Like regular people, for example, might like a food blog and they're gonna need something fun to do in October. So you can just find local people in your area and just like you said, a media day is a really good idea. Invite them down.
Every town has their local celebrities.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what you need.
And that's good.
Find who your local celebrities are and reach out to them. I think that's some easy thing. And last question before we wrap things up. Mm-hmm. This is from Randall Taran. What's the most impactful yet least costly method of marketing for us on tight budgets? My guess would be Facebook ads. But that's my guess.
So I would like to like just reframe the question, right? Like,
yeah.
what is the most impactful thing on a tight
bang
budget,
for buck.
Right?
We'll think of it in terms of bang for buck.
So like, but it's like just the concept of like, when you think of marketing, like marketing shouldn't be an afterthought. It shouldn't be great. We've invested in the haunt. We've invested in the actors. We have the management team. We have all these things. And oh shit, now we have to market at the last hour, right? Like marketing is what brings people to your attraction, what allows your attraction to grow each and every year. Like that's how you're getting new people. That's how you're retaining your current people. This is how you make the money to fund everything, right? So just from a philosophy perspective, like your marketing is super important to your business at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people always approach is like, well, what, you know, how can I spend the less and get more, right? And it's actually really counterintuitive with marketing. It's like, if you're working with the right marketing partner, it's the more you spend, the more you make. That's kind of like the frame. So, like, but when it comes to like, what is the most really like bang for your buck, right? Like Google search, for example, is very, very effective. But like I said, like you can't undercapitalize Google search. If you, like for example, last year with our client in Alabama, we upped the budget for Google search significantly. And we went from like, you know, not performing very well our first year with not a lot of data to like a 6x return on Google search, right? And the only difference, we ran basically pretty much the same ads for the most part. It was just the budget, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you want to make sure that you can capitalize your campaigns as much as possible, because that's where you're going to get the return. And that's, of course, if you have all the infrastructure to understand what is working and what's not working.
What's a baseline budget for Google search?
Yeah, I mean, it really just depends market to market. I would say, like, I can't like give like a number. It really just, there's so many factors that depend on, like, you know, the size of your haunt, what you're looking to do.
New York is going
to
be tighter than, you know, rural Mississippi, for example,
right?
More competitive, and that's really the issue. Is Google search, the pricing is determined by competitiveness. If
right.
you are in a competitive location and a competitive search term, it's going to get real pricey real fast. Where if you're not in a competitive region, especially if you're doing geographic targeting, that price will sink like a stone, and you're doing pennies per click. You know,
right? And I mean, with advertising in general, digitally, my client in Alabama, Jason, we were talking to him. He was doing a testimonial for us. So we had this long conversation that we kind of clipped up. And one of the things he mentioned was kind of like, before working with us, he worked with a lot of people in his local Birmingham market, that they, great agencies, they got great results, but they just couldn't get results for him. And the reason what, like, he kind of attributed to that was, like, they just didn't understand not just the haunt space, but like the event marketing. And when you think of a haunt, right, you really have that 4 to 8 week period to market your haunt, and that's it. And when you think of digital platforms, like, they're not designed for seasonal businesses. They're designed for people who are advertising all year, right? And, and doing that. So you really have to understand how you're working in these short time frames to make it work in the first place. Okay. To answer your question with budget, like, you know, I can't talk on like a really per channel basis, but kind of we have two packages that we work with. So the first marketing package we have, it's called the foundation package. And what that is that's for people with smaller budgets who kind of want to build up their tracking infrastructure, you know, build up their leads list and their emails, you know, build that database where everything is connected, right? So we can start getting that data. Because data in year 2 and 3, that's where you're seeing all the growth from that information. You know, we kind of have those packages kind of starting around like the 15 grand mark is really where we're getting that. And of course, we're running ads and you're still growing, but the focus is on how can we collect that data, right? And then we have our growth packages, which are, these are the people, you know, like Schmitz and Warehouse that really want to grow. And that we kind of put roughly around the like 35, 40 grand starting price for, like, you know, these are, of course, full service, all included packages. Just so people can kind of think of like where your numbers are. And of course, everything can change depending on, you know, who you are and all that stuff. But we put that roughly in the starting price range. And, you know, we've worked on projects, you know, as much as 100 grand overall, right? And it just depends your goals and what you're looking to do. But that, I think that allows people to get a good range of what they're looking at.
Well, we are pretty much out of time.
Yeah.
So awesome. Alex, real fast, just tell the nice folks where they can find you, both online and at Transworld.
Yeah, for sure. So we're Conjured Media. Our website is conjured.media, not .com, .media. We're going to have our brand new site out hopefully by tomorrow, maybe the next day. We're going to have a case study out from all of our 4 years jam-packed of data. This is like hundreds of hours of work that I have put in to kind of put this together so you guys can see exactly what it's like to work with us on a campaign to kind of see all the growth that we've gotten over the years. And so you can get some tips and tricks as well to build your marketing up and to kind of work with your own partners on that. That's going to be out right before Transworld. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Conjured Media and booth 1809 at Transworld. And, you know, anyone at any time, feel free. You can email me, alex@conjured.media. I'm happy to answer any marketing questions you have. I'm a nerd for this stuff. I love to talk about it. So any way I can help and add value, I'm happy to do so. Or come see me at the show.
And everyone, Alex will be doing the show largely by himself. So
yes.
If you are willing to watch his booth for a few minutes and let the poor guy pee, please swing by booth 1809 and let him and let him know.
Yeah, I'll trade you free marketing advice for bathroom bricks. That sounds fair, right?
That's fair. So yes, please lend a hand to poor Alex. He's really going to be overworked and dead tired and could use our help. On that note, everyone, thank you very much for joining us and spending the past hour with us. We greatly appreciate your time. This is Haunt Weekly. You can find more of us at hauntweekly.com, Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook, youtube.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel. Every episode in history is available there. It's an easy way, really, really easy way to listen to whatever episode stokes your boat or floats your boat or stokes your fire or whatever the expression is. I totally screwed that up.
Yeah.
And also, definitely, you can find us on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher, whatever podcast are sold. And catch us Sundays at 8 p.m. I screwed that up in the intro. Great job, Jonathan. We're Sundays at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern for the live at facebook.com/hauntwave. Until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And we will see you all next week.